entire life are limestones on the blackboard in symbolic unbalanced equations. I can see that you are ready to blast me, but I still go on. Explain the extraction process in a tight, controlled, for such a very, very nice tone. Inside, I am screaming, transcending all the unnatural, choking elements into four, into one. Where did I leave that alchemy of youth? The iron is cast in those pig eyes like hard and gleaming bullets. The aimless tick-tock, 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 winding them up. The technician has pulled the blinds down.
Victim of a passing car, or a poison, or a gun. It would have been quicker, more humane, and nature's proven ways would soon have drawn you back into the rich, warm soil. But instead you lie in a Quillsworth plastic bag, mummifying, slowly, uselessly, in the council dump. Because I gently picked you up and brought you home, and built you a hospital ward from a laundry basket, lined with Monday's Times and this kitchen fire guard as a roof. But I didn't realize at the time that I had joined the populist league of interfering busybodies and do-gooders who do more harm than good. There are real challenges in this world, souls to be saved, famines in Africa. Old people die cold and alone while I waste my time with a pigeon. So what are you anyway? A parasite and a pest. You steal our food, ravage our crops, spread disease, corrode the stonework on our city buildings, and worst of all, you shit on the heads of harmless passers-by, and then coo innocently. But what hurt me personally was the ingratitude, and that stubborn lack of trust that made you treat me not as your benefactor, but as your incarcerator. Your refusal to acknowledge me in my role as a Latter-day Saint Francis, a Mother Teresa to the avian world. I made you a perch of ash plant freshly cut. I gave you clean water and a tray of muesli free of additives. What more could a pigeon ask for? So what undiscovered demons caused you to madly crash and bash against the side of the basket facing the window when it was obvious you couldn't escape? Were you thinking of the times you exploded from the ivied sycamore, startling the browsing rabbit as you pecked and clawed desperately at the plastic bars, more like a hawk than a dove? The books say birds are intelligent. I thought if I left you alone, you would soon settle down, a model patient, and come to understand those comforting Orwellian words, protective custody. But I was wrong. When I returned, I still saw defiance, and so I wrung your neck and dropped you in disgust. And left you prone, your wings still twitching, lying on a bed of green-white droppings and scattered muesli. But you had your vengeance. You placed a subtle curse upon my head, for now I fear that maybe it's a sign of incipient madness that a grown man should shed a tear for a dead patient. I should have left you, did I?
Well, if you had, we'd never got that home and a lot of some kind. Thanks for that, Jerry. And next we have another old ale favourite, and it's Shane's Heart.
coincidence. It might be connected with Joey's story there earlier. But this one is called The Stopper. I stop the alley to and fro each day. My evil eye displays a clear intent. My spring is high enough to reach my prey. These lethal chants of mine keep tongues at bay. My lexic pitch does not embrace lament. I stalk the alley to and fro each day. At every chance I strike without delay. My feral breed does not require consent. My spring is high enough to leech my prey. This broken thrush was doing its low sachet. Unlike the other 99%, I walk the alley to and fro each day. I've yet to taste the hooded crow's dismay. He scans the path before each rare descent. My spring's not high enough to teach this prey. Oh yes, I draw a blank some weeks, but say, I never show a sign of discontent, but stalk the alley to and fro each day. My spring is high enough to bleach my prey. Slightly related one. The incident at Sunset Ridge. Black Tom's asleep behind the hunting lodge. The noonday sun ensures he'll rarely budge. A skyward spring beyond the window ledge. He downs his prey, a flash of feral badge. You're smiling, but your shallow eyes begrudge. Desert my game? I doubt I'd keep that pledge. I stayed that day your bike went off the bridge and mused until you felt this muzzle nudge. It's yours, so cluck it, stop it in your fridge. I've heard it said you're very swift to judge. I don't subscribe to what you still allege. Bloody murder by the cricket hedge. Liz reminded me of this one, so I dug it out. Spoke about the shoes, the feet. Cutbacks. It's the time of the year for enrolling in night classes and extra classes. So this is about one of those classes. Cutbacks. But it must run. We can't withdraw the course. It's expected, and enrollments are up. They've got a foot in the door. It's on the prospectus, subject to demand. A run on class materials? Rubbish. We'd be sued without a leg to stand on. Hand clapping and footstool step-ups in pencils were good enough once. Now we must put them all through their paces. We know a new floor permits only soft soles. There's a footnote here about that. But think of the cost if you were a parent of centipede twins who'd foot the bill. The board chairman will hear about this, I say. He's a weekly pedicuree well known for his stance on PE and ability to think on his feet. Furthermore, his wife is a podiatrist, chief observer for the three-legged race, and founding chair of the Alumni Association of Millipedes.
This didn't begin life as a poem. It began life in a church in Lustol on the 15th of February 2007. And it's a pretty big day for me because it marked the start of my use of a moleskin notebook. I went into Wolf's bookshop in Lustol and I bought my first moleskin. Some people smile so they know what I'm talking about, and those of you who don't know what a moleskin notebook is like, it'll do wonders for your writing. Okay, this is, I guess it's a prose poem, and it doesn't really have a title. But it was begun on a Wednesday in the stove in the church at a funeral. The great thing about going into a church service is that it shuts me up. The silence of my mouth stills the chatter in my head. I will make peace with the voice of my Father. I will make peace with the voices of angels, saints, and devils, with the priests and brothers of my youth in my old age. I am resolving. I am in the presence of a turning moment, feeling like a throbbing seascape. I am here, but also there, reliving the years and years of upbringing. I cannot block out those years, nor bow before them. They are here and live for me. I embrace them and will settle up with them when the time to do that is come home to me. I write in this church surrounded by the sound of feet making their way to communion. Where is my communion? My community. I sit forever on a fence looking round me in directions blown on wind. This funeral service is too full with thoughts. I find it hard, impossible to be calm. But do I want to be calmed? Don't I really prefer to be excited by the thought of calm and its absence? The sand is dribbling down through the hourglass, gathering below in another pile. The sand falls to rest, but I feel as if I am always at the dropping point. Always with the particle that is next in line for falling through the hole into speed. Always on the verge, the edge of motion, never at rest, never quiet. Always watching out for the next slip into motion. Yet I want to lie flat on my back and feel the weight of support under me. I want to be in a quiet place. I am in tears, layers of tears, a sniffling nose dripping, mingling with the salt from my eyes. I cannot control myself, nor do I want to. I want to cry for Dave Barry, because in crying for the Dave, I never really knew. At that point, I stopped writing, and I have never read the poem in public before, so it's been an experiment in seeing whether I could give voice to the scribblings. I was told afterwards that it was extremely bad manners to write in a church during a funeral. Thank you.
Outside, I find
The mind's affection dwells in this and keeps the person from splitting out plane into soul and body to the use of vessel through all knowledge. This one's called Love of War. The war is over, love. Think not of your life, either here or above, or fill in the broken light with the coffee dreams you're thinking of, which suffices the cream in your existence and makes me weep, not out of pity and sympathy, but from a castle I want to keep. The love I have prevents me the agony of having faith, the high-hand gulf filling us, this present as new in place, of the reality we could not muster, the courage to give sparingly, three moments that weren't on offer to be applied more daringly, to produce a gorgeous cluster, snippets and memories to spur the next and the next and the next and the next charm moment, feeding into detriment, crawling into blur, crawling into cupboard, crawling into darkness, crawling into salvation, crawling into emptiness, crawling into a nation, our own private army, poised and eager to shed blood from ourselves, if need be, from friends who once dead. Nowadays the whole arsenal is a joke on you from me. I think my rehash of what's up to be. I switch with both lines while I go to practice my dual pretense. Get the glory of the firing line and the fighting regiment.
Finally, unless anybody else wants to jump up after, it's Paul Casey.
Just to let you know, next week we're starting early. I mean, I know this has been said before, but there's going to be at least a dozen people representing different parts of Munster next week at 9 o'clock here at the Munster Slam Championships for 2009. The two people chosen from that will go and represent Munster and the All Ireland, which is this year being held in Galway and also next throughout the provinces year after year. So it's going to be quite an exciting evening next week, so I suggest you'll come along early if you can. You have smoking 3 weeks ago.
Oh.
So did Rosie, actually. Uncurling of the plastic, opening of the packet, or even in indulgent savourings or macadam throat, the true danger lies in the smoke within, lies in deception creations, lazy submissions, apathetic anti-considerations. The true danger of the cigarette lies not in the habitual auto-reflex, but in the lies, roles, the automation of the habit, collections of habits, collections of unreal selves to layer and retain the true self. The great paradox and true danger lies in becoming the smoking cigarette, in lucid eyes watching as he turns slowly. Chemicals. 4,000 chemicals. An angry kidney declares war, finds allies in the lung, throat, the mouth, and the quickened aorta. and the march begins. 43 carcinogens, nicotine, acetone, ammonia, benzene, tar. General Kidney shares the plan, the intricate plot, and ranks formations, shares the perfect coup on the brain. Forth with the perfect strategy, with a surprise long carefully crafted in sleep to finally subdue another alien morning. Cadmium, pyridine, hydrogen cyanide, lead, formaldehyde, mercury, and the brain blinks and sighs. Inhale. Exhale. Inhale the extremes. Exhale the balance. Inhale the human. Exhale the virus. Inhale the farmer's hope. Exhale the unpredictable bounty. Inhale the forest whispers. Exhale the newborn eagle. Inhale. Exhale. Inhale, political cartography. Exhale, a mighty river. Inhale, extinction. Exhale, as the salmon par. Inhale, the radiocarbon airwaves. Exhale, the bill. Inhale, the great breweries. Exhale, the barley and the grain. Inhale. Exhale. Inhale the next vision. Exhale the perfect conception. Inhale the clearest day. Exhale the perfect human. Inhale the spirit complex. Exhale the simplest answer. Inhale a breath of earth. Exhale a breath.